Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 9 years ago, in 2016, the General Assembly passed HB 2. It came to be known as the bathroom bill because it required individuals to use public restrooms that corresponded to the sex listed on their birth certificates. The reaction was widespread. The state faced an economic backlash, which ultimately resulted in the law's repeal. Even Donald Trump, then running for president the first time and appearing on NBC's Today Show, sided with those opposed.
North Carolina did something that was very strong, and they're paying a big price, and there's a lot of problems. And I heard one of the best answers I heard was from a commentator yesterday saying, leave it the way it is right now. There have been not very few problems. Leave it the way it is. North Carolina, what they're going through with all of the business that's leaving and all of the strife, and it's on both sides. You leave it the way it is. There have been very few complaints the way it is. People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble.
So if Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
But Trump has since changed his position on this topic. In his first major speech to Congress last year, he referenced an executive order that he signed on his first day back at the White House.
I signed an order making it the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
Later, at a press conference, he explained his decision this way.
No matter how many surgeries you have or chemicals you inject, if you're born with male DNA in every cell of your body, you can never become a woman. You're not going to be a woman.
Trump's election and the decisions he's made since taking office have opened the door for those on the right to renew their efforts. In North Carolina, Senate Bill 516 has been introduced, called the Women's Safety and Protection Act. It, again, requires individuals to use restrooms in public schools and government buildings based on the sex listed on their birth certificates. And it doesn't stop there. This hour, we take a closer look at what this bill does propose, and we'll hear from both sides on this issue. We're going to start, though, with that closer look at the logistics of all this. Lucille Sherman is a reporter at Axios Raleigh, and she joins us now. Good morning. Thank you for being here. Welcome. Okay. Lucille, Senate Bill 516 was introduced by Mecklenburg-Iredell Senator Vicky Sawyer and co-sponsored by Gaston County Senator Brad Overcash. What was the impetus for its introduction now?
It's sort of unclear, actually. After the bill was rolled out, reporters asked both sponsors questions about the legislation, and they said that they were not ready to answer questions about the legislation. So it's not really clear what the impetus is. But I think we can assume that Donald Trump ran on trans rights or anti-trans policies or in his second run for president. And so I think Republicans have looked at that issue and seen how well that performed for him in his run for re-election and sort of assumed that that might play well for them going forward. Whenever we asked, reporters asked Senate Leader Phil Berger sort of about this legislation and whether it might have the same impact that HB 2 had on North Carolina in 2016. He pointed to other states and said, other states have passed legislation similar to this and they haven't had problems. So we're assuming, you know, if this legislation moves forward, we will not face similar issues.
And what exactly does this bill propose? How is it different from HB 2?
Yeah, so it's similar sort of in the bones of the bill, but more broadly, it has a lot more specifics. So one aspect that jumps out to begin with is it gives more detailed definitions of biological sex. It defines male, female, man, woman, girl, boy, goes into great detail on all of those. And then it applies to different facilities in terms of bathroom restrictions. So prisons, domestic violence center and rape crisis centers are also covered beyond just government facilities and public schools, which is what was covered under HB 2.
As you mentioned, this bill goes much further than HB 2 did in terms of defining sex. This bill follows the line of reasoning presented by Trump in its attempt to standardize and codify definitions of gender to include only male and female, such as sex chromosomes, naturally occurring hormones, and genitalia present at birth. But has there been any debate, any conversation at the General Assembly or in the Senate, because this is a Senate bill, over what this would mean for those who have already undergone reassignment surgery?
No. So this bill was also, there was a similar bill filed in the House, an exact replica filed in the House, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago. Neither of those bills have advanced so far. It's not really clear if this is a big priority for Republican legislative leaders, because when asked about this legislation, it wasn't really something that they said, yes, we're going to move next week. Yes, we're moving this in the next couple weeks. It's still unclear when they're going to move it. In terms of the definitions, though, I think one thing that is notable about this legislation is it would not allow you to change your birth certificate or driver's license if you undergo sex change or hormone therapy or anything like that.
So the picture on your driver's license or the designation M or F on your driver's license on your birth certificate would not necessarily comport with your appearance. What barriers or obstacles does that present to people who have undergone reassignment surgery?
Yeah, I think it could sort of present a really complicated framework for people who have already gone through this and have already had their licenses changed, or maybe they need to have their passport renewed. It sort of just opens Pandora's box to create a lot of complications, I think. What's interesting is we haven't had any debate about this in the legislature yet. We haven't heard from either side of the issue. We haven't heard from lawmakers explaining why this is needed. So it's still in its very early stages.
So the Senate bill also seeks to, quote, provide protections for women against sexual assault, harassment, and violence in correctional facilities, you've alluded to that, juvenile detention facilities, domestic violence centers, dormitories, and restrooms. Have there been any incidents in facilities like those where women have been, in fact, endangered or by transgender individuals? Do we have any empirical data on that?
The sponsors of the legislation haven't sort of brought forth any examples yet, but I think that you're right. The idea of this legislation is women protection and safety. And so those inclusions in the bill sort of point back to how the bill is being branded, if that makes sense.
So this bill, the Senate bill, was referred, I think, to the Rules Committee, which I've been told in the past by other reporters that this is a place where bills go to die, but maybe not this time, because the companion bill, as you mentioned, in the House has also been introduced. And usually when there are two identical or fairly identical bills going through both chambers at the same time, it has a better chance of passage. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I think whenever the bills are referred to rules immediately out the gate, it sort of means this bill may never move, or we don't know when it's going to move. One thing that's currently playing out, sort of unrelated to this in the legislature, is the Senate just rolled out its budget, and the House will roll out its own budget proposal next month. And so those budget proposals are really top of mind for legislative leaders at the moment. So what we may see is they might sort of get through those budget proposals and come back to this legislation later. But again, it's been something that I've been asking legislative leaders publicly and behind the scenes about if they plan on moving this bill. And it's still unclear sort of if it's top priority for them. I think it remains to be seen.
Mecklenburg-Ardell County Senator Senator Vicki Sawyer was the co-sponsor of this bill, and she hosts a podcast with David Coble, which her office referred us to. We invited her to join us on this program. She declined, but her office did refer to the podcast. And on one of those podcasts, her co-host, Mr. Coble, addressed the reasons he feels that if passed, this bill will not be a repeat of HB 2.
Sometimes there can be some squeamish Republicans
yes.
about things like this. And, you know, maybe worries about, you know, when HB2 happened, there were states that, oh, we're boycotting North Carolina
right.
and stuff like that. I think those that might be worried about something like that should really maybe check themselves and read the mood of the country
yeah.
and who we just elected. And one of the major things that was a theme in Donald Trump's campaign was the insanity of which we have gone with transgenderism.
So do most Republicans in the legislature agree not only with the sentiment, but that the time has come to do something?
I would say that it doesn't seem like they disagree, but I think Republicans might still be timid about this issue in North Carolina. Even though we're seeing across the country, this issue has played well for Republicans in the last few years. Other states have introduced similar legislation. I think it's still sort of a sore subject for Republicans in North Carolina. They were sort of bracing for reaction whenever these bills were filed the last few weeks. But that being said, I don't think they're necessarily afraid of broaching the issue. It's sort of just proceeding with caution, it is what it feels like.
At the national level, there have been moves, including guidance issued by the Health and Human Services Director, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., that seeks to stop recognizing the concept of gender identity. I know you are not, Lucille, a medical doctor or a mental health professional, but has anyone from these disciplines offered the General Assembly opinions on gender identity, either as a concept or as a medical reality, or for that matter, as something that is misguided?
One thing that's worth noting is that the legislature sort of brought up issues related to this in 2023 when Senator Vicky Sawyer was the key sponsor on legislation that prevented trans women and men from playing sports on teams that assign with their gender identity. And so this issue sort of came up then in a similar way. There weren't, of course, as many restrictions as we're seeing in this legislation, but a lot of that was discussed 2 years ago when they brought this up. A lot of these topics were broached then, and Republicans still sort of proceeded with the legislation as it was.
HB2 is said to have cost the state more than $3.76 billion in lost business over about a dozen years. And former Governor Pat McCrory very likely lost his bid for re-election because of that to Roy Cooper and because of his support for HB2. But he recently said that he does not anticipate the kind of blowback that he experienced then, even from Democrats, because, quote, the American public better understands the impact this issue has on locker rooms, on women's sports and prisons, unlike 8 years ago. Are there Democrats in the General Assembly who agree with that?
It's unclear as of now, but I think that it's a question of, I think Democrats are sort of approaching this issue carefully because there are some Democrats in swing districts or more conservative leaning districts that might feel like they might need a vote with Republicans on this issue. Again, it's still early. It's very unclear. None are speaking out about this, but I do think Pat McCrory's right and that the tides have changed on this issue, and so Democrats are sort of treading more lightly or maybe would prefer to not talk about it altogether.
So I have less than a minute left in this segment, but both chambers of the General Assembly have similar bills. When might they debate or vote on this, and would that passage likely be vetoed by the governor?
Definitely vetoed by the governor. The crossover deadline for bills to be taken up by the opposite chamber is in early to mid-May. And so we might see those bills come up and be advanced, at least one of them by then. If not, I think we can expect that maybe they have a lesser chance of survival. And yes, the governor would definitely veto this. Level.
And would there be votes to override the veto?
It's unclear.
Okay. That's Lucille Sherman. She's a reporter for Axios Raleigh. She will stay with us through the program in case we need her, but we'll hear from both sides of this issue when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Senate Bill 516, which was introduced by Mecklenburg-Iredell Republican Senator Vicky Sawyer and Brad Overcash, who represents Gaston County. As I said, we reached out to both of Senator Sawyer's and Senator Overcash's legislative assistants. They referred us, or at least Senator Sawyer's office referred us to her podcast, in which she explained that this bill is really only to protect women from sexual deviance.
Let's just go back to reality. If you are a man dressed as a, or identifying as a woman, and you actually look like a woman, nobody's going to stop you from using a restroom anywhere, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's obviously you're going to use the bathroom. I mean, but this is for those deviants or sexual deviants that will go into a bathroom for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And this gives women the right to be able to protect themselves and backed by law. And that's all it is.
Well, and later she talked about second guessing herself and why she quickly decided that she was right in taking this stance.
We filed the bill and I started seeing the blowback from it and how folks were triggered and just going on and on and on. You know, at first I was like, oh God, did I do the right thing? And then I slept on it and I was like, heck yeah, I did the right thing. This is exactly what we need to be doing just to protect our young women. And I actually am more in love with the bill now than I ever was before. So,
good.
I mean, all the bullying and the shaming and the, you know, stuff that I see online, it actually, I think I'm weird. It empowers me.
Well, no, it
should. Their outrage empowers me because then I know that I'm doing something right.
That is from Senator Sawyer's podcast, which she co-hosts with David Coble. That's the other voice you heard there. On that same episode, their guest was our next guest, Tammy Fitzgerald, executive director of the NC Values Coalition. That's an organization she founded in 2011, advocating for pro-life, pro-family, and pro-religious liberty values. Obviously, she approves of this bill, and we will hear from the other side later in the program. And we should say that though we offered both sides the opportunity to appear together, both sides decided against that approach, and we will honor that. Welcome to the program, Tammy Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be here.
You have said that this new Senate bill is not HB2. You say this is about protecting women and girls in vulnerable spaces. It's about defining the terms male, female, man, woman, and sex according to biology. Why do you view that as being necessary?
Well, as you just stated, that's exactly what the Women's Safety and Protection Act is about. It's about protecting women and girls in vulnerable situations by ensuring that male and female are defined according to biology, not according to feelings, and by restricting men and boys from entering women and girls' private spaces. Now, I want to say this only applies to certain government buildings. It does not apply to public accommodations or private businesses. And that's a major difference between this bill and HB2. HB2 dealt with non-discrimination laws, with the state preempting local non-discrimination laws in cities and towns. This doesn't deal with non-discrimination laws. The Women's Safety and Protection Act simply defines the terms male, female, man, woman, and sex according to biology. And then it protects certain private spaces.
Well, if this is about protecting women from deviance, as I think Senator Sawyer mentioned a moment ago, and it doesn't apply to all facilities, only certain facilities, and as she mentioned in her response, or in her characterization of this, no one's going to challenge you if you look like a woman and you use the women's room. How does this really protect women? It seems to have a lot of leakage in it, a lot of holes in it.
I'm not sure I agree with that statement that no one's going to challenge you, because I think this would give women the right to challenge a man in a woman's bathroom. We're talking about men here. We're not talking about other women. And so we believe that women have the right to privacy in these certain spaces. And I did want to say this only applies to restrooms, changing facilities, and overnight sleeping quarters. And so, you know, that's where this applies. And I think that in the last 8 years, the public has has seen the light, so to speak. People are just waking up to the harmful effects of gender ideology, and North Carolina needs to be a leader in this effort to protect girls and women.
Well, clearly, you don't agree with the other side on this issue, and that's fine. Obviously, President Trump has said that there's only two genders, male and female. And though you may not agree, many people have already had reassignment surgery. So do you worry about what may happen to them as they try to navigate the world, whether trying to board an airplane or go through customs because your passport doesn't agree with what you look like? Does that concern you at all?
Well, look, we're talking about less than 1% of the population, Mike. And what they're demanding is that the majority, the supermajority of people in this country and in this state comply to their gender ideology demands. And so we're talking about a very small population. And what people in America, what people in North Carolina have decided is that they should be able to live their lives without having infringement from this kind of radical ideology that took over the country.
You're right about the numbers. This is a tiny part of the population, estimated 1.7% of the world's population, and only 0.9% of adults in North Carolina. That means only about 100,000 people out of 11,210,900 people who live in North Carolina. And actually, that number to me seems high. So why is this worth the effort? And if that 0.9% of the population has made travel and living more difficult, why isn't that an infringement on their rights?
Well, look, we're talking about this bill applying to prisons, jails, domestic violence centers, rape crisis centers, juvenile detention facilities, public schools, K through university. And so we're talking about places where women ought to have privacy. A majority of the men who want to be in a women's prison have been convicted on some sexual assault charge. We have studies from all over the world showing this, that the men who are asking to be put in women's prisons are in prison because they were convicted on sexual assault. Everyone I know thinks it's crazy to put a man convicted of sexual assault into a women's prison where he has ready and numerous, you know, victims, future victims. In public schools, we have girls going to the bathroom with biological boys who claim to be girls in Buncombe County, for instance. We've gotten numerous calls from parents in Buncombe County saying, what can I do to protect my middle school girl from having to go to the bathroom with boys? And we just believe that girls should not be sacrificed on the altar of gender ideology. These girls ought to be able to go to the bathroom without fear of seeing a boy in the bathroom.
But why put restrictions on changing your birth certificate or your driver's license or your passport? I'm not sure they can put restrictions on passports. That's a federal thing. But why put those restrictions on people who have already had the reassignment surgery or even those who are presenting as the opposite gender because that's what they feel they are?
Well, look, those are official government documents. These same types of documents were included in President Trump's executive order. He included passports, where you have to put your actual biological sex on your passport. And so right now we have a situation in North Carolina where a driver's license and a birth certificate, you can put anything you want to on those documents as official government documents. And this was as the result of a collusive settlement between then Attorney General Josh Stein and the state. And this is fixing the problem with birth certificates and driver's licenses so that your actual sex is displayed on your birth certificate or your driver's license.
But this, this impacts everybody who considers themselves to be transgender, those who are presenting as the opposite gender, even though they haven't had the surgery, and those who have. And as you mentioned, it represents a tiny portion of the population. And those who would be categorized by, I think, the population at large as predators or deviants are going to make up an even smaller portion of the population. And yet all of those people are being grouped together. Is that inaccurate?
I want to say I have not called these transgender people deviants. I believe they deserve care. And I don't believe they deserve to have rights, but I do believe they deserve care. And I have a great deal of compassion for people who identify as transgender. Well, but the truth is that a driver's license or a birth certificate is what actually shows the real sex of a person. And so if they don't want to, I mean, they're the ones that always talk about the genital examinations, which is ridiculous. Nobody's going to do that. But this is how you prove what your sex is, your driver's license or your birth certificate. Or if you show up in an emergency room, you know, we all have to answer those ridiculous questions on those little forms they make you fill out. What is your gender identity? There's a reason for that, because there is a difference between men and women. And it makes a difference in medical treatment. And pretending that there's no difference, that you can just decide one morning what you want to be that day, is harmful. It's not only harmful to the people who identify that way, but it's harmful to society. And so these are just reasonable, common sense provisions. They don't apply to public businesses or public accommodations. They only apply to jails, treatment centers, and schools.
I want to give you an opportunity to clarify something you just said, because I think it's important that you do. You said you sympathize, you empathize with people who are transgender, but you also said you don't believe they have rights. Expand on that. What does that mean? You don't believe they have rights?
Well, what they're asking for is the right to use the bathroom of their choice, or the right to sleep in an overnight sleeping facility with girls, with biological girls. And we have four school systems in North Carolina that now give, that now have policies for overnight field trips that allow room assignments based on gender identity, not sex. And they're not telling parents about this. So imagine your daughter shows up in Washington, D.C. on her end of school field trip, and she's assigned to a room with a boy. That's exactly what happened to these parents in Colorado, Joe and Serena Wales. And this bill is intended to stop situations like that.
In a press release from your organization, NC Values Coalition, you say, quote, North Carolina must return to the common sense understanding that men are men and women are women. But the American Medical Association and the World Health Organization emphasize the importance of affirming care for transgender individuals, including hormone therapy and surgery, and science and medicine have long recognized transgenderism as being a natural variation of human diversity. Is this another instance of ignoring the science?
Absolutely not. I love to talk about this topic because there are so many trumped up studies that were done in the past to attempt to show that care for transgender people meant cutting off healthy body parts or giving them hormones that mutilate their bodies and make them lifetime patients. But the new studies coming out are showing that there is no efficacy to the gender identity treatments that have been done in the past. The amputation of healthy body parts, giving the hormone they give to patients with cancer, you know, to stop puberty is just brutal for these teenagers. And seven countries in Europe have now stopped doing gender transitioning treatments, even social transitioning. Adopting the stance that they will just wait and see, because the truth is that 90% of adolescents that question their gender or think they're transgender resolve their difficulties in favor of their biological sex by the time they're adults. And so it is cruel, actually, to pursue experimental medical treatments. And the American Medical Association has just stuck its head in the sand. Most of the major medical organizations in America have done this, while Europe is ahead of us on the science. And they are now producing studies that show that these treatments, these surgeries, the hormones, that they don't work. They don't resolve the underlying gender dysphoria. And in fact, they make these young people into lifelong patients who suffer from all kinds of medical diseases, like increased risk of heart attack. Their bone density is, their brain development even is affected by these chemicals that are put into their bodies.
And how much of this push toward ending this or putting limitations on this and also putting up roadblocks if you want to call them that, by not allowing them to put the sex of their preference on their driver's license, etc. How much of that is wrapped up in religious belief?
Absolutely none of it. I mean, I do believe, I am a religious person. I'm a Christian. I believe in God's creation order, that he created man and woman as separate sexes. But this is really about biology. You cannot change your sex. And biology determines your sex. The definition in this bill for sex is pretty complete. It means, the ability to procreate and to have the organs that go with that. And so sex is sex. And most people in America have come through this gender ideology craze and decided that it is a craze and they want to return to normal. And so we believe that this bill is in line with the wishes of the majority of people in our state. And we think that it's going to go a long way to protecting young girls in public school, girls in dormitories across the state who are being asked to room with transgender males and not finding out until they move all their things into their room that this is the case.
I have less than a minute left. And some of the language that's not just you, but some of the language that centers around this issue sounds very much like the language that was centered around the emergence of gay people, the acceptance of gay people, and also same-sex marriage. Is there an echo in your ear of those things, of those same arguments?
Well, I think most people would agree that trying to pretend that your sex can be changed is not based in reality. That this is really kind of a psychological issue with people. And this is not based in reality at all. And so I pray that these people can get real help, not fake help, like cutting off healthy body parts and being encouraged to take cross-sex hormones. And I'd also pray that the people in the state who just want to go to the bathroom and not encounter a male in the bathroom can do that freely.
Tammy Fitzgerald from the NC Values Coalition, thank you so much for your time. The Other Side when we come back.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Our New South. This Charlotte-based Levine Museum podcast explores today's South through social, political, and cultural topics in their historical context, featuring conversations with locals driving change. Our New South is available on all podcast platforms.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We've been talking about Senate Bill 516 and heard arguments from the pro side. Both sides agreed to be on the program, but they asked to be on individually, so we are honoring that. Again, this is a Republican piece of legislation. Senate Democrats have a different point of view. Among them, Buncombe County Democratic Senator Julie Mayfield.
And I'm going to get emotional because I'm sorry, but this is just mean. There is, like, no other way to talk about it. It is just mean, and it is bullying, and we need to be done with it.
Our next guest is on the same page. Sarah McHale is the executive director of Time Out Youth, a local organization dedicated to supporting LGBTQ+ young people between the ages of 13 and 24. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back to the program. You've been sitting there listening to the entire show so far. What are your reactions?
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me back. I think one of the main things that I was reacting to is a fundamental difference in my belief that all people have rights. So based on some of the things that I heard, this bill and people that are in favor of it don't believe that all of the people that I serve in my organization, more than half of the youth we serve identify as trans and non-binary, do not deserve rights. And that's really hard for me because I see these young people as people people that are brave and vibrant and really excited to participate in society being who they are. And I see this bill as something that actually doesn't protect women. If we really want to protect women, we would look at what's actually harming us, and that is not trans women. What's actually harming us are things that are attacking our ability to make choices for our own bodies, our ability to vote. I think that this bill is a really large distraction from what's actually happening in the social and political commentary right now around women.
Legislators are sent to Raleigh, and congresspeople are sent to Washington to do their best to represent all the people, all of their constituents, and to treat them equally and fairly. What message does a bill like this send to people who are transgender?
Directly from the mouths of our young people, which again, that's 13 to 24, but I'm speaking about the youth that are working towards changing identity documents. I'm speaking about adults, 18 to 24 year olds, who are being told that it will no longer be okay for them to exist as humans. These aren't men dressed as women. These are women. And I believe that women should have rights. And that to me includes all women. I don't believe that it is my right to police someone's idea about who they are. So the message they're getting is, one, their life will become more difficult than it already is, trying to access jobs, housing, all the things that basic identity documents we need to be able to exist. And also, my job as a clinical social worker is to think about the mental health of our young people. And we are losing young people to suicide and to violence because of bills like this.
Transgender individuals have always been with us since the beginning of time. But it is only recently that they have been recognized and that they have felt brave enough in many cases to present themselves to the world at large. And that presents the world at large with some complications. And I think that there are legitimate concerns about biological men who may be wearing a dress using a woman's room just for privacy concerns, never mind the fact that they may or may not attack that woman while they're in the room. It's a privacy issue, and I think men wouldn't necessarily want women walking into the men's room. So, and this involves locker rooms, too, as we have come to know. So do you see a solution to this?
What I want to say is I think that this language around men dressed as women is what's harmful. Men every day dressed as men perpetrate harm against women. They do not need to dress as women to harm women. One in four women are assaulted by and large by cisgender men. So I'm going to push back against the idea that men dressed as women in bathrooms is the problem, because we are not seeing
What about the basic privacy concerns?
Right. So for me, when I go into a public restroom, and yes, Tammy mentioned this is public facilities, bathrooms, jails, places like that, where when I think about a public bathroom, I think about stalls, right? I also think about, again, there is no documented case of transgender women going into bathrooms to harm other women. So there's a difference between biological men in women's bathrooms harming women and trans women in bathrooms who are just trying to exist. Tammy has peed next to a trans woman. I am certain of that, because there are trans women in bathrooms every day that we don't know. We talk about the ability to police people's gender, but we're actually just talking about our subjective eye. So I have had friends that have short hair that have been told, get out of the bathroom, but their women identify as women. So we're leaving a lot of room for a public interpretation when we're actually the 0.6% of the population we're talking about just want to get jobs, get housing, be taxpaying members of our society, work and support people in North Carolina. And I think that we're making a really huge leap to be lumping this into violence against women, which is perpetrated by men. And we cannot forget that.
And Senator Sawyer admits in her podcast that there are no one's ever going to be asked if you look like a woman to prove that you're a woman. So that it seems to be the whole thing is difficult to deal with on many different levels. Adele emails something that you just spoke about. What about biological women who look like a man? My daughter, who has very short hair, she says, has been questioned about her presence in a woman's public bathroom. Here in North Carolina, I fear for her safety, particularly when leaving a bathroom where she might be confronted by a concerned father.
Right. So this is the same issue that I spoke about when it comes to actually protecting women. I believe, and opponents of this bill believe, that this does not protect all women. The other piece that's really important here is what we're talking about. This is a small social idea talking about people going into bathrooms. North Carolina experienced this. We talked about HB2. This is HB2 times 10, far more sinister, asking people to not be able to change their documents. Tammy said you can now go and put whatever you want on your documents. That isn't true. You need the birth certificate that says your sex to then be able to change your driver's license. So right now you have to be able to go and change those documents if you're transgender and believe your document should reflect how you present to the world. And this bill is saying that even if you present to the world in the way that you identify, you still can't change that. Friday night, I sat in my building with five trans women with a bunch of lawyers supporting their change because they are not able to get jobs. They look and feel and present like women. They can't get jobs. They can't get housing because their IDs say that they're men. They get violently attacked sometimes when someone sees their ID and sees that there's a mismatch. So for me, protecting them is just as important as protecting myself as a cisgender woman. And these women are not hurting me.
As executive director of Time Out Youth, you have interacted with young people who may be struggling with their sexual identity and with their gender identity, and some of them may have already begun the process of transitioning from one gender to another. What should we know about these people?
Yeah, we should know that they don't wake up one day and decide to change who they are. That this is an innate knowing that is recognized by medical professionals, by psychological associations, that sex might not be changeable, but gender is. And we might have an inherent disagreement on the difference between sex and gender, and that's okay. I don't expect anyone and everyone to certainly adopt and understand this, but I do expect that everybody has rights and that we respect that. And I'm talking about young people who for many years of their lives have worked to socially transition, which is what many people do, which is changing their appearance, being able to take medical interventions that show the world who they believe that they are and are not causing harm to people. And these young people are feeling incredibly erased. Like the attempt at who they are is not allowing them to be, to have protections, to be able to get jobs, to be able to be protected, even if they are stopped by the police and their ID says what they are. We're talking about this also disproportionately impacting Black trans women. The people most violently impacted by this are people that are already not protected by law. So I think that if we want to create a bill that protects women and girls, that we need to think about who's actually harming them. And when we talk about gender, we talk about sex being two things, and our president said sex is male and female. That isn't even biologically true. 1.7% of the population is intersex, meaning that it isn't even Black and white when it comes to sex. So for me, when we're talking about such small percentages of the population, that is how it feels like a distraction from a much larger issue.
And we have an email from a medical doctor addressing that. He had a question. I'm not sure anybody on this panel could have answered it, but I'm going to pose the question just for food for thought. What do these bills do about hermaphrodites or people with sex chromosome abnormalities, such as with XYY or YXX genotypes? That's above my pay grade, I got to tell you. But I'm sure you are somewhat familiar with that. Anybody questioning their sexual or gender identity goes through pain. Psychological pain and fear in many cases, particularly as a young person, as a child, many of the people that you deal with at Time Out Youth. What is the impact of compounding that with the kind of law that we have been discussing here this morning and the fact that we are discussing it? How do these discussions affect them?
The mental health impacts are going to be far reaching. We've been talking about this at Time Out Youth since, as Lucille mentioned, 2023, when we went to the General Assembly to argue against the anti-trans sports bill. We went to fight against gender affirming care ban and the Don't Say Gay bill, all that passed in our state, putting North Carolina farther and farther behind in where I thought we were moving forward in saying that, again, when we were arguing an anti-trans sports ban, we were talking about three young people in the state who wanted to play the sport that aligned with their gender identity. So what does it say to those young people and to young people that we want to support their neighbors and peers is that we will create bills that attack a small population to distract from what's actually happening. When we talk about this, we do not talk about our fear of girls going into boys' restrooms. And that's because we are not afraid of women. We are afraid of men. I want to make that really clear. This conversation does not, by and large, talk about what it would feel like if a girl dressed as a boy. That conversation doesn't happen because at the core, we are talking about who perpetrates violence against women, and that is cisgender men. And I want that to stay because that's what's happening to our young people. They are afraid. And I am a cisgender woman existing in this body for 43 years, and I have been afraid of men far more often than I've ever been afraid of a trans woman. And I would venture to say that most people would agree with that. So I want my young people to hear me say that trans women are women, trans men are men. Gender is not harmful to other people. My gender has nothing to do with the gender of another person.
But this is not really part of the Senate bill argument, but there have been arguments about trans women who transitioned from being a man to a woman playing on women's athletic teams. And it puts them at an added advantage because they are larger. They have grown up probably with a greater musculature, et cetera. Is that fair? And should we be talking about that as well?
I don't think we should be talking about it. I don't think that it's fair. And I don't think that it is the conversation that needs to be had when we talk about safety. So that is a different conversation. It's a conversation that's happened. The USA Sports has figured out ways to define this because, again, if someone transitions medically, they are taking hormones that then change the way that they perform. In the same way that we talk about this in the sports issue, again, we don't talk about this when we talk about girls and boys sports, right? So for me, the conversation that we keep losing is how small of a percentage we're talking about when regular transgender people, not athletes, are trying to get jobs. I literally am talking about young people that cannot get jobs, or they get jobs and they are discriminated against so much at work that they quit, and then they are continue to not be able to make a living wage because we're so concerned about them not being able to change their IDs. I'm really afraid that this bill will impact far more people than anticipated because there are so many more people that we don't recognize that are attempting to just exist.
We often hear from people on the right about a liberal agenda, a gay agenda, now the trans agenda, but the right also has an agenda. And as with so many other things these days, they are saying the quiet parts out loud. Again, from Senator Sawyer's podcast, here's her co-host, David Coble.
We have a narrow window right now of about 3.5 years to try to reset, to get back to a place where just general common sense can prevail, enshrine some of these things in law, right? Because if you enshrine them in law, when and if, and it will happen, there will come a time where Democrats will come back into a power, then the onus is back on them to like change the law now to allow men back in women's spaces.
Any reaction to that?
Yeah, it's really disappointing to hear that someone speaking really not common sense. It's just a reminder that common sense is not subjective. Because when I hear that, I think really how distracting it is to continue to talk about men and women's spaces. When I spend every day fighting for young people who are kicked out of their homes because of who they are to be able to exist and thrive, and what they need for their mental health is supportive adults, supportive government officials, people that not just care about them and have empathy for them, but also want them to have rights as humans. So for me, the gay agenda as a queer person is just for young people to be able to grow up, to be able to be who they are, to be able to celebrate their wins, successes, to be able to have IDs that match who they are.
I have less than 30 seconds, Sarah. Have you been approached, or have you been part, or people that you know been a part of this conversation who agree with you at the legislature?
Not yet, but we hope to have those people on our side when we go and fight this in May.
Sarah McHale is Executive Director of Time Out Youth. Tammy Fitzgerald was joining us earlier. She's Executive Director of North Carolina Values Coalition. I want to thank you both for a very nice conversation, and I hope that next time that we can have you on together, because I think this requires a conversation between both sides. And Lucille Sherman joined us earlier in the program. She's a reporter for Axios Raleigh. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.